The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
From the studios of the Shepherd Radio Network, it's Afternoons with Mike. This next hour is all about our walk with Jesus, with local pastors, newsmakers, people who are making a difference for the gospel. Now, here is your host, Mike Gilland.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the program today. It is indeed that time again. We welcome today to the Shepherd Studios in Orlando, Mark Mink. Mark is a friend I've known for a number of years from the Gainesville area. In fact, he was with me up in the studios in Gainesville for my program. Goodness, that's over a year ago now that we did that one. But it is great to have you here in the studios in Orlando. Welcome, Mark.
Mike, thank you. It's so great to be with you today.
It's great to see you sporting this incredibly looking beard that you're wearing now. You look very college professor like. Man, I feel like I need to turn in some written assignment to you or something.
Yes, well, I think I'll be grading the entire segment today, but you'll get an A plus, I'm sure.
Oh my goodness. Mark, you were on my program not long after initiating a campaign that you've been under. In fact, it's one that's changed your life. You kind of put your career on hold, if you will,
yes,
to be a part of something. And I think it's wonderful when people get a vision and get motivated and in such a way that it really costs something. And that's what happened with you. There something happened in your life, a need that you saw, and God began to give you real wisdom, I believe, and some maybe direction as to what could be done. So why don't you tell our listeners in this segment, if you will, what happened? What was it that drove you to lay your career down and pick up the role of an activist? What was that thing?
Well, first of all, thank you for the opportunity to share. I'm honored for the chance to do so and share with your listeners. And what happened to me, Mike, really has been kind of a lifetime in the making. I was adopted as an infant in a closed adoption in the mid-1960s. I grew up in a loving family, knowing that I had been adopted. I have an adopted older sister. And so I always knew that my life was blessed to the degree that a young woman had chosen life over death and then had mm-hmm. made another difficult decision, which was to place her child for adoption when she didn't feel she could care for him. And that was my life, obviously. And so my parents told me that at my earliest age of understanding. And so I always had a sense of the regard for the sanctity of human life. I think I understood maybe earlier in my life than a lot of my friends did the significance of the decisions that were made on both ends of that equation. And so I grew up not knowing anything about my biological family, but knowing that my life had been spared, as it were, and that I was allowed to live and grow up in a loving home. And so with that being said, I guess I would say I've always been a pro-life guy my whole life. And so my wife and I, who we've been married for over 28 years now, we always looked for ways to support, whether it was our local pregnancy resource center or lawmakers who shared our convictions and values on mm-hmm. the issue of the protection of innocent human life. And so that had been kind of a lifetime engagement for us as a married couple and for me as someone that was had grown up as an adopted child. So having said all that, all this kind of culminated in early 2018 when I attended the men's prayer breakfast in the Gainesville area that you were a part of putting together. Mm.
I was privileged to do that. I got to lead worship that day at this event. A bunch of people were there at the country club.
Yes, Gainesville Golf and Country Club. Mm-hmm. It was early in the morning. Sierra, who is a wonderful pregnancy resource center in the Gainesville area, was a part of that event. And there were our mutual good friend, Fred Shore, was part of putting that event together. And I went as a supporter of the event. It was, like you said, there were about 100 men there. So mm-hmm. I was very impressed, first of all, to show up and see that many men.
And a lot of them pastors.
Yes, a lot of churches represented. Mm-hmm. And so to see that many men show up that early in the morning at an event with that topic was very encouraging to me. But I went into the event just thinking, okay, here's another wonderful pro-life event. But I wasn't prepared for what was going to happen in my heart that morning. And as you and I talked earlier, that audio clip that you played that morning that shared the audio representation of one BB hitting the side of a tin can representing 10,000 lives lost in the wars of America's past. Mm. And then to hear this this walk from the American Revolution up through the Civil War, up through World War I, World War II, Korea, Vietnam, the War on Terror, and then for the speaker in that audio clip to transition to say the war on the unborn child. And then to hear these BBs hitting the side of the tin can and just this endless sound that I'll never
forget.
Thousands
of them. Yeah.
Unbelievable. And with each BB representing 10,000 lives.
Right.
So it just struck me in a way that morning that I don't think I was quite prepared for. And just instantly, I really sensed that the Lord kind of flipped a switch in my heart and that I was receiving kind of some marching orders, so to speak, that it was time for me to engage. Kind of one of these, here I am, Lord, send me moments where I knew that, where I didn't know where it was leading, but I knew that life wasn't going to be the same in the near future.
Yeah, I saw a movie, Mark, just recently, and it was an interesting way that it began and the movie ended the same way. And the young lady who was the actress in this movie was writing down as she was looking out at a beautiful countryside. She was an artist and a writer. And her first words were, it's always fun to write words at the beginning of a story because you never know where those words are going to lead.
Right.
And so from that beginning place, those may not be the exact words or the order, but that's the gist of what she said. And from there, the story unfolded. And that's exactly what happened to you. The Lord put new words of marching into your mind and into your heart. I think a lot of us have been moved by events. A lot of us have been affected by what we've seen. But I don't know too many people that's made a bigger career change that really began on a moment the way that did. I mean, it was so clear. I'm reminded of people who were instantly called into ministry or who became a missionary. Mm. But in a real way, that's exactly what's happened to you. You've become a missionary. You were given a ministry that, that's what we're going to be talking about today. That's where this story begins to unfold. And the fact that you heard that story about the lives, I know it's somewhere over 64 million, 65 million lives now in America given to abortion.
Right. Just a number that's hard to even comprehend.
You think about that's generations of people.
Oh, sure. Because the second and third generation of those lives that were not allowed to live would in many cases be living today. And it was just, again, it was a number that I had heard and read statistically, but to hear it presented that way was really striking to me. And of course, you'll recall that the keynote speaker at that event that morning was Saul Pichon, who has become a dear friend to me and Deborah. And Saul has worked for many years with New Life Solutions, which has an amazing organization on the west coast of Florida. And he was there at the invitation of Fred Shore. And Saul, that morning, I'd never heard his testimony. And he shared, of course, you'll remember, the testimony of being the firstborn son of a woman who survived a Nazi concentration camp.
It's an amazing thing.
It is amazing. And a book was written about it. I believe a motion picture is going to be produced out of that story. But for her to survive this horrific scenario where she watched most of her family have their lives lost in a concentration camp, and then even the attempted sterilization procedure with her that would have rendered her unable to have children, but for the grace of God to come upon her life through that situation where she that process was not completed. I know we don't really have time now to go into all the details, but essentially a woman who's had one ovary removed and the second one about to be removed when God intervenes And this Jewish doctor that was ordered to finish the procedure had mercy on her and sewed her up and sent her back to her barracks and said, "Don't tell anyone what happened here today. And if you ever have children, remember me." And our friend Saul, that's short for Solomon, because Solomon is the first name of the Jewish doctor that that spared this woman a lifetime of inability to have children. So to be hearing from this man in 2018, who is the fruit of a woman who could have died in a concentration camp or could have been rendered unable to have children, to hear him speak, and then to see how his life had been transformed and how he was now giving his life in this ministry of a New Life Solutions. It was that in combined with hearing this audio clip, it just really heightened the awareness that I had that I was responsible to God for what I was being encouraged to do. In fact, there was another gentleman there that day who's another friend of mine, Philip Ferrara, who spoke that morning. And I remember specifically him talking about a conversion that he went through from being convicted on the issue of legalized abortion in our nation to having genuine anguish over the issue. And then he looked at all the men, and it was interesting because I remember that morning, I remember distinctly, it was his firstborn son's birthday. So his young son was with him, who might have been, I don't know, 7 or 8 years old at the time. I may have the age wrong, but he was a little guy, and it was his birthday, but his father was with him too. And so he was there sharing his personal testimony, his personal journey on this front, but with his son with him and his father with him in a room full of many, many pastors, including pastors from our church. And he just challenged the men. He said, "What is it the Lord's putting on your heart to do?" He said, "If every man would just do what God's called them to do." And that was the sense that I had, Mike, was that I wasn't responsible for how all the other men were going to respond, but I was 100% responsible for what I was going to do with what I sensed the Lord was calling me to do. And it really became a matter of obedience, you know, with what we're going to talk about today on your program. I don't have a lot of control over the outcome, over whether or not the initiative that we're engaged in will succeed. I do have control over what I do, though. And that was the essence, is that I walked away that morning knowing that life was going to be different. I called my wife. I said, "Hey, we need to talk, because I'm not sure exactly what happened this morning, but
something happened.
Something happened, and I'm responsible for it." And then after she and I had dinner with Saul that evening, where I shared with him everything the Lord had really stirred in my heart that morning, it started to kind of direct a path, and that path has been ongoing since. So we got a lot to cover, but I'm grateful for the opportunity to share.
Well, we do have a lot to cover, and I am so thankful that that path that was initiated that morning, it's really brought a lot of change already, and I can give witness because, you know, what happened, none of us knew the impact that the playing of that BBs, and that is something that, friends, if you've not heard that, you can go to YouTube and then just type in BBs abortion, and that video will come up, and you too can hear that. None of us at CIRA, I was on the board at that time at CIRA, and none of us would have ever believed that it would have had quite the impact that it did. I mean, I knew it was strong, but boy, to see that change and to hear it in that context that morning. So what God does in your heart, that too is unexpected. And you began to get a vision, and a vision that was ultimately going to unfold in the days to come, a vision that is actually doable. It's a big dream. It's a big vision.
Yes.
And it's going to take the hand of God to make it. You know, sometimes we think, well, I've dreamed dreams that I can do, but this is not a dream that you can do or I could do or any one or 10 groups of people could do. This is only something that God can lay on the hearts of his people throughout the state of Florida. And with that, it can be done.
Yes.
It can be done.
Yes.
And so I don't know exactly what the first step of clarity was, but I'd love for you, if you could share, what was the first thing that you remember God directing you to do after having this overwhelming compulsion from God that life is going to be different for you? You're going to have to engage in a new plan.
Right. Interesting. Well, you know, the first thing I think was probably looking at this issue legislatively. You know, I see this kind of as the issue of life in our nation and in our state as almost like a coin that has two sides. And the Pregnancy Resource Center side of the coin is such an important part. And I firmly and strongly believe that the pregnancy resource centers around the state and around the country need to be supported by people that share our views on this issue, because there are so many young men and so many young men and women that need help and need guidance and need to know what their options are for choosing life. But there's also a legislative side to this, because one of the most important jobs of the government is to protect people. And yet we've seen this assault on vulnerable human life, specifically preborn life in the womb, that has been allowed to happen since that awful Supreme Court decision in 1973 that we now know of as Roe versus Wade, where 7 of 9 justices made a decision that basically made abortion on demand. It basically overruled the abortion restrictions in just about every state in the country. Mm-hmm. People will often refer to it as settled law or the law of the land, without really thinking through the fact that it was never passed as law.
It was never a law.
No, never. It was a decision by a Supreme Court that really made a decision ignoring the personhood of the preborn child. And as such, it spiraled downward to what you referenced earlier, that 60+ million lives lost. And it's just been tragic to me to see that it continues to this day. You know, it's hard to believe that a nation that would sanction and subsidize the killing of preborn children in the wombs of their mothers can simultaneously cry out for God's blessing. Mm-hmm. I struggle with that often. You know, it's not uncommon to hear politicians at every level stand up and at the end of a speech say, God bless America. And oftentimes it's presented more as a demand upon God than as a humble request for the blessing of God.
Right.
And the audacity for any national leader specifically, because of a Supreme Court decision, to stand up and say, God bless America, when the same nation that we're asking God to bless has decided that we're going to continue allowing this murderous onslaught on preborn children. Mm-hmm. So having said all that, the question that I left that morning with was, what could we do in our state? You know, this was a time, 2018, there were a number of states that were passing heartbeat bills. There were bills passing through legislatures that were successfully passing. And Florida seemed to be a state that was well positioned to do the same. Mm-hmm. And so maybe after our break, I'll go into a little more detail on kind of where we went from there.
Yes, indeed. The heartbeat aspect is one of the, I think, a key touchstones of everything that you're talking about here today. It is truly an important realization in this legislative process that Mark is working on. My guest today is Mark Meink. We are up against a break, and I'm going to take that break right now, and we'll be back in a moment. We'll pick this back up. Don't miss it. In fact, take a moment, call a friend, tune in, listen to what Mark is sharing right now. As we take this break, this is The Shepherd Afternoons with Mike. My guest in the studio today is Mark Meink, a friend for many years now from the Gainesville area. And when I was at Abundant Grace, Mark, I don't know exactly how it was that we first met, but you're one of those guys that when I met, I felt like I'd met my long lost brother. It was just yes. One of those kinds of meetings. And I can remember spending time with Isaac, your son, and having the thoughts that, man, this couple, they've done a wonderful job training this young man. I'd never known a young man being any more respectful, more courteous, more willing to serve. And he and I got paired with him. He was my assistant at an event we did one time, and he was amazing. So every job I threw at him, he was able to do with excellence. And I thought, this reflects on his mom and dad, and it really did.
Well, thank you. We're really proud of him. We're proud of all our children, but I know you got to spend time with our firstborn, and he's a tremendous young man.
Oh, my goodness. He is indeed. And I'm excited to see what role in a future government that I believe he may well be our president. And I hope I get to live that long to live to see that happen. We were talking in segment one about the plan that God gave you after being at that breakfast, after having your life. Really, I think of the scripture in the Old Testament where the eagle messes up the nest, the mother eagle ruffles the nest for the little ones, and it's time for them to move.
Right.
And you had your eagle's nest, if you will, ruffled that morning. And the plan, the, I guess you could say, first steps you could see was going to be that of legislation. And what could be done in the world of legislation, in the world of government, because it was in some ways, it was an allowance by the American government that allowed the Supreme Court in 1973 to, without, as we said, without any congressional law being passed. And it's the role of the Congress to pass laws and to make laws.
Right.
And the Supreme Court is really called to uphold our Constitution. And yes, but we've seen a legislative form take place inside of judicial branches of government to where they are actually legislating from the judicial bench. And that's exactly what happened in Roe versus Wade. And so it was never passed as a law. And yet most Americans who've never really studied it would not know that.
Right.
And so the plan that God gave you, as it's starting to unfold, it included, as we were talking at the very end, the word heartbeat.
Right. Well, and like we talked about before the break, I knew that around the country there were a number of heartbeat bills that had been filed in state legislatures that were working their way through those respective House and Senate chambers and then getting to the desks of many governors who were signing them into law. And of course, I think we all know that all of them have been challenged as unconstitutional because of Roe v. Wade.
Mm-hmm.
But yet there's also been thoughts that hopefully in the near future, whether it's in the next few years or maybe even the next decade, that we would see that awful Supreme Court decision reversed. And at the same time, I commend these states for at least making the effort, because when you know, if you're a governor of a state or you're a senator in a state or a House member in a state and you're passionate about the issue of life and you're involved in the legislative branch, then that's what you do. You pass legislation. You don't say, well, it's probably going to get struck down. Well, you still do it because it's the right thing to do. And let me say for the record, when we're talking about heartbeat bills, I have always believed, and everybody on our team believes, that life begins at conception. So when I talk about a heartbeat bill, I'm not suggesting that the life that exists from the point of conception to the point of a detectable heartbeat is less worthy of protection. I don't want to suggest that at all. But I'm talking about state legislatures that had kind of carved out a path to run on to at least try to do something. So there's all types of legislation that you'll see filed in state legislatures, disability abortion bills and pain-capable bills and parental consent for abortion bills and heartbeat bills and dismemberment abortion bills. And all of them are at least are attempts to do something legislatively. And so I started studying those efforts in Florida. I knew of a state lawmaker that for 8 years in a row had filed a bill called the Florida for Life Act, which dealt with the issue of abortion in the state of Florida. And 8 years in a row, he filed it, and 8 years in a row, he couldn't get it through the committee process, even to get onto the House floor to be voted on. So it really went nowhere fast, even though he had the commitment of then Governor Rick Scott that if he ever got the bill on his desk, he would sign it into law. And so in seeing that happen over almost a decade, years ago, I was aware that there was some reticence, some hesitation in the state of Florida with these types of bills. And ironically, the state of Florida has had what would have been what would be considered a conservative majority in the House and Senate with conservative governor for quite some time now. Mm-hmm. And so compared to these other states, it seemed like it would be the type of state that would be able to successfully pass something like a heartbeat bill.
And, you know, the thing, if I could just jump in on that, some of these bills, like the dismemberment one that you were talking about, looked like it was going to make it all the way, but then it got to the Senate. And explain what happened there.
Correct. So there was a bill filed in 2018 by Senator Debbie Mayfield that dealt with dismemberment abortion that simply would have prohibited a physician from knowingly performing a dismemberment abortion procedure in the state of Florida. And it passed the House handily. I don't remember the exact number, but it was a wide margin that it passed. And then it was referred to a Senate Health Policy Committee where it died on the last day of session from lack of action. And I had been tracking that bill. I had attended an event that you and I talked about earlier that we were both at in January of 2018, the pro-family days that were held at the state capitol with the Florida Family Policy Council. And one of the parts of that event was learning about legislation on different fronts related to family or issues of protection of life and things of that nature. And so one of the bills that was being discussed at that time was this dismemberment abortion bill, and it was expected to pass pretty handily. And it was the last year that Governor Rick Scott was in office, and I feel certain he would have signed it into law. Mm-hmm. So we were tracking that and encouraged that had a chance to pass. And it was actually after this men's prayer breakfast. So if you kind of look at the chronology, it's January of 2018. Actually, I remember the date. It was January 22nd because it was an anniversary of Roe v. Wade. Mm. And it was January 22nd. We're in Tallahassee. February 22nd was the men's prayer breakfast. And then on March the 10th was the last day of the legislative session in 2018. And that's when an email came out shortly after that from the Florida Family Policy Council indicating that that Senate bill, which I believe was number 1890, the dismemberment abortion bill, had failed to pass through the Senate committees and had died in that health policy committee from lack of action. I was stunned, Mike.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, I think of the scripture verse. It says, hope deferred makes the heart sick.
Right.
But a longing fulfilled is a tree of life.
Yes.
And there have been so many of these times where people, Mark, I remember a number of years ago, you will remember this as well, where there was Operation Rescue going on in Washington, D.C., especially, where people were getting arrested. They were putting, it was like a civil disobedience
right.
Actions that they were taking and sometimes making a human chain and then being arrested, willingly being arrested to illustrate the cause that they were out trying to rescue Americans who were dying in their preborn state. And, you know, we thought that would take and that there would be some sense of common sense that our legislators would realize this is wrong. And yet so many times this hope that buoys up is then kind of dropped, just like that Senate bill never made it pass.
That's right. And it reminds me of a quote we talked about earlier from Dietrich Bonhoeffer when he said that silence in the face of evil is itself evil, that God will not hold us guiltless. Not to speak is to speak, and not to act is to act.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was like the final straw for me. When I saw that had not passed, I thought, okay, if that bill didn't pass, I don't know that much else has a chance, at least under this current leadership. And so...
So the way of getting the bill through both houses of the Florida State House, of that and Senate, that plan wasn't working.
No, it didn't appear to be because, you know, what happens, without taking too much time to explain it, is lawmakers can file any bill they want, essentially, and each year thousands of bills are filed by lawmakers in the House and the Senate. And as you might expect, they can't all be heard. There's just not enough time. The session is 60 days each year, And so there's only so many bills that can be heard, but there's all kinds of strategy behind what gets submitted and what gets kind of shepherded through the committee process. And it has a lot to do with who's in the office of the House Speaker, who's serving as the Senate President, who's the governor, what are the legislative priorities. And I get it. I get it from a political standpoint. There's strategy. I totally understand that. But, you know, there's a lot of lawmakers in Florida that have a real passion for the issue of the protection of life. And many of them will campaign on that. They'll come into churches and go to events and say, hey, I'm 100% pro-life. You know, send me to Tallahassee and I'm going to fight for the protection of human life and the sanctity of human life. And they can file bills all day long, but they don't control whether or not those bills get scheduled for committee hearings. And so typically what will happen is a bill, for example, will be filed in the House and then it's going to get scheduled for committee and it's going to go through three committees, generally speaking. And if it passes the first committee, it'll go to the next. If it passes that, it'll go to the next. And if it passes that, it'll go to the House floor for debate and then for a vote. So it can't get debated and voted on by the full House until it works its way through the committee process. So the committee process is where these bills get filtered out. Many of them die in the committee process. What was very frustrating for me with the dismemberment abortion bill was not that it didn't pass a committee. It was that it was never heard in the committee.
Mm-hmm.
It's
unthinkable.
If it gets heard in the committee, it at least has a chance to pass. Now, if it dies, then it dies, right? But if it can't even be debated in the committee unless it's put on the schedule. And so the following year, in 2019, there were two fetal heartbeat bills that were filed, one in the House and one in the Senate. And Representative Mike Hill filed the bill in the House, and Senator Dennis Baxley filed it in the Senate. The problem is neither of them were ever scheduled to be heard in committee.
Mm-hmm.
So in the year that so many of these bills were working their way through the legislative process in other states and actually passing the House and Senate of those respective states and then being signed into law in Florida, they were never even scheduled.
Mm-hmm.
So the short version, without going into a lot more detail in that process, was that I really had a sense that we needed to transition away from the legislative process and start looking at what I now refer to as legislative bypass surgery, which is the constitutional amendment process. Because
right.
Florida is one of 26 states, if I have the number correct, that has a provision within its constitution where its citizens can propose an amendment to the state constitution. So in Florida, there are five methods of proposing amendments to the Constitution. The most commonly used method is where the state legislature will place an initiative on the ballot by simply passing the initiative in the House and Senate with a 3/5 vote. So if the state legislature wants to put any type of an issue on the ballot in front of to basically put it in front of the Florida voters so that the voters get to approve or reject the proposed amendment, they simply pass it in the House and Senate with 3/5, and it goes on the ballot. They don't have to get petition signed. They don't have to run a campaign. They don't have to raise money. They just vote on it. That's the most common method. In every election cycle, we always see a couple of proposed amendments at the legislature. They're called legislatively placed amendments.
Now, if I could just ask a question, why wouldn't our current, what would be the reason why, with as many conservatives as we have, supposedly, why wouldn't they do that? Why wouldn't they put this amendment for protection of life on the ballot?
Good question. They could. I can't really speak to why they don't, and that's certainly still an option. I think the challenge that I would see with that is that by the time it worked its way through the House and Senate to get a 3/5 vote, I don't know that the language that they would come up with would necessarily be something that would resemble what we're doing. In fact, there was, now that you mention it, in 2012, there was a legislatively placed initiative that went onto the Florida ballot that dealt with taxpayer funding of abortion and no constitutional right to an abortion, something of that nature. And it was legislatively placed, so it did receive the 3/5 vote in the House and Senate, and it was placed on the ballot. When you looked at the ballot summary, however, It was, if I remember correctly, now that you mentioned it, it was four sentences. It had, I think, 139 words. It had the word abortion in it five times. It talked about rape and incest and death and injury. And it was heavy and dark and, you know, legalese sounding. Mm-hmm. It was just a heavy proposal. And it was probably constitutionally accurate in terms of the way it was being presented. But if you can imagine the average Florida voter reading that when they go to vote, and as you might expect, it did not do well. It needed 60% of Florida voters to approve it, and 45% approved it, and 55% rejected it. So it missed the mark by 15 points.
Yeah, and you think about, that's not a huge, it's not like a landslide at all, but I mean, it was a substantive victory for defeating once again. So there has to be a way, there has to be a plan. And what we're going to be talking about in our last segment today is what God has led you to do. And that is the answer. And you've been working on this for how long now?
Well, I guess you could say officially since that
morning in 2018.
Since that morning, or maybe unofficially since that morning, rather. And yet, what we're going to share with you after the break officially began at the end of 2019 when we received approval from the state of Florida to begin circulating our petition.
So there is a petition, and we're going to talk about that. There is an amendment that we can all take part in, and it's as simple as signing your name. It's as simple as that. We're going to find out about that when we return. My guest today is Mark Mink, and we'll be back with Mark in just a moment. This is The Shepherd. So enjoying my talk today with Mark Mink from Gainesville area. He lives in Newberry, and this thing that you're doing, this job that you've been given, this task at hand that came as the result of this really a life-changing morning where you are just provoked by the Lord to get involved with the creation of an amendment. And we know that the way that in Florida an amendment comes, you have to get a great number of basically petitions signed, signatures signed, in order to get this thing to where it passes muster and is going to be placed on the ballot. And that's what you've been doing.
That's right. So basically in Florida, it works like this. If a citizen group wants to propose an amendment to the Florida Constitution, they have to draft a ballot summary, which is a description of their proposed amendment. And it has to be less than 75 words if a citizen group is doing it. They then submit that to the state of Florida. The state of Florida puts it on a formatted official petition. They assign a serial number to it. And then the clock starts ticking because there's all kinds of time guidelines related to the election cycle as far as when you have to qualify for ballot placement and so on and so forth. But what happens at that point is you have to circulate the petition and get enough Florida voters to sign it to represent 8% of all the votes that were cast in the previous presidential election. So, as we all know, 2020 was historic turnout in Florida.
Yes, it was.
Highest number of registered voters in Florida's history, and a huge, I think the voter turnout was like 85%. There's 14 million plus registered voters in Florida, and I think 11.4 million or so. I may be off of my numbers, but it was an enormous number of voters that actually cast a vote for president in that election. So what that backs into is an 8% number that equals 891,589.
That's the magic number that you have to get.
That's the number. And that's the number of petitions that we have validated by February 1st of next year, 2022. So validated means that it has to be signed by a Florida voter. They have to complete it properly. They basically provide their name, the address that's associated with their voter registration. They have to either write their voter registration number or provide their date of birth. They have to put the date that they signed the petition down in the little box. Mm-hmm. And then they have to sign it. And then once we receive those petitions from Florida voters, we have to turn them in eventually to the supervisors of elections for every Florida county that we receive petitions from. Now, to date, we've received petitions from registered voters in 65 of 67 Florida counties. There's only two counties in Florida, amazingly, that we haven't received at least one petition from yet. And I'm sure in the coming weeks, we'll have all 67. And then we'll turn them all in, and then the supervisors of elections of those respective counties will validate them. So I'm giving a lot more detail on this, but I want people to understand how cumbersome this process is, because it's not an electronic signature. It's not one of these emails you get that says, hey, sign the petition and let your senator know this or let your governor know that. That's not what this is. This is a process where the Florida voter has to actually sign this petition and complete this petition
with a pen.
And then they have to turn in the original petition to us. They either mail it to us or we receive it at some event that we've been at where people are signing them. And then we turn them in. At that point, the supervisors of elections are validating them. And so we've been told by our team that's consulting us that our target number is really 1 million. We need to get 1 million because we know that some of them, the person that signs it maybe isn't registered to vote, or they forget to sign it, or they don't fill it out properly, or something like that. And so the target's 1 million. It's a big state. It's a wide state. It's a long state. And the challenge is getting the petition in front of enough people fast enough. Let me just tell you what the petition says. The ballot title of our initiative is the Human Life Protection Amendment. And our ballot summary says this. It's one sentence, 20 words, that states that all human beings have a right to life, regardless of age, illness, or disability, when there is a detectable heartbeat. Now, as I mentioned earlier, everybody in our team knows that life begins at conception. But we were looking for language that actually could have a chance to pass in Florida. We mentioned that 2012 legislatively placed initiative that had the 139-word, four-sentence, kind of clunky ballot summary that the voters...
With some very harsh words.
Very, very strong language. Mm-hmm. And to me, actually, when I see that 45% of Florida voters approved it, that was actually encouraging to me, because my thought is, wow, if 45% of the voters would approve that, I bet we could close the gap with all human beings have a right to life, regardless of age, illness, or disability, when there's a detectable heartbeat. And so what our proposed amendment does is it's an attempt to build a constitutional wall of protection around vulnerable human life. We've been talking for most of our time, Mike, about preborn protection, but this goes beyond that. And if you break down the language, all human beings have a right to life, regardless of age, illness, or disability, when there's a detectable heartbeat. We're talking about the elderly, the infirm, the disabled, the preborn child in the womb from a point of a detectable heartbeat. Basically, if a heartbeat is detected, the life is protected. And that's the objective. It's not perfect language. Some people aren't going to like it because it doesn't start from conception. Other people won't like it for some other reason. But it's at least an attempt to do something in Florida constitutionally to circumvent the logjam that we see in Tallahassee on this issue. And so your listeners can help by doing a couple of real simple things. The first thing they can do is they can go to our website, which is heartbeathero.org, heartbeathero.org. When they get to the site, they'll see a video right on the top of the homepage. It's 90 seconds long. They can watch it. It explains what we're doing. And it talks about becoming a heartbeat hero by getting 20 petitions signed by registered Florida voters and then mailing them back to us within 30 days. So at a minimum, your listeners can go to the website. They can print out a petition because there's a link at the top of the page that says petition. They can print it out in English, Spanish, or Haitian Creole. And they can just print one out, complete it, and sign it, and mail it in. But if they really want to help us, they'll print out 20 of them, and they'll get their friends and their family and their neighbors and coworkers to sign them that are like-minded on the issue, and they'll mail those in to us. the address to mail them into is on the petition itself. So it's very simple to know what to do. And if they watch that video, they'll notice a reference to what's called petition partner packets. We have a number of locations around the state, dozens of locations around the state that are serving as what we call hub sites, where we've delivered thousands of packets of petitions, each packet containing 20 petitions, like the one that I have that I'm holding up now that, Mike, obviously you can see in the studio, that has an overview sheet that explains what we're doing, that answers some frequently asked questions, that has an action step sheet that kind of walks the petition gatherer, the volunteer petition gatherer through the process, and then has 20 blank petitions. But people can print those out at home. They can print 100, they can print 10, they can print 5, they can print whatever they want. Complete them, mail them back to us. That helps really, really a lot.
And that's it's so important to realize that you cannot use electronic signatures for these. These ballots, even if they're printed at home, need to be signed with an ink pen. And if you can help in this way, and you can do that by, like what Mark said, dropping to one of these hub sites, which the locations are on the website, or print your own and up to as many people as you can get to become a Heartbeat Hero. Now, Mark, I know the clock is ticking on this.
Yes.
We're talking about a deadline of February 1st that they actually have to be in and validated. Is
yes,
that correct?
That's correct.
So that really means that they can't be turned in the day before.
Right.
Because they won't be validated that quickly.
That's
so
right.
So what is the workable deadline that you're looking at?
Well, you know, by the end of the year at the latest, we'd like to have everything turned in. Right. And then that gives the supervisors of elections around the state the time that they have allotted to be able to validate them. But there's things we have to do on our end as well when we receive them, because the petition signer is supposed to submit them to us. They don't send them to the supervisor of elections. They send them to us,
right,
which is that address that's on the petition itself that's mailed back to us. But once we receive them, there's things we need to do. We have to, if it's in an envelope, we got to open the envelope and take it out. And if it's folded three times, we got to unfold it. And then we've got to put them in stacks of counties so that they're in like counties. Yeah. And then we've got to get them all processed and submitted. So it really helps us if people can get them to us as quickly as possible. So our Heartbeat Hero campaign, which is what we're presenting on that video on the website, talks about kind of a self-imposed 30-day deadline. Meaning, let's say, for example, that it is October 1st, and someone goes to our website and they learn about our initiative. Well, if they want to be a Heartbeat Hero, they print those petitions out and mail them back to us within 30 days.
Mm-hmm, by now, November 1.
That's right. And it's not a state deadline. It's an internal, let's get it done quickly. Human nature is such, Mike, you know, if people think they have until December 1st, they wait until, you know, the end of November. We want them thinking, move quickly. And so that way we keep a steady flow rather than just a big, giant, massive influx of petitions all at the last minute.
You know, I remember years ago, Mark, the United States Postal Service issued a deadline of December 18 as being the last day to mail a package that you could get it delivered by Christmas. And invariably, people wait until that day.
That's right.
I mean, this is a great percentage of the packages are done by that day. And this is a sad thing. As a concert promoter for years, I can tell you that people, you're right, it's human nature. We wait, we exert our option right up until the final moment. But I really think it's important to go back to what we were talking about earlier. We're not talking about some benign issue that really doesn't matter. And, you know, even the language, Mark, when you were talking about those bills that made it all the way to the House, but then you use the word the language, they died in the Senate.
Right.
And I'm thinking what struck my heart is how many lives died while we're waiting on getting these signatures done. I mean, think about that.
Right.
Think about how many more BBs, if you will, are going to have to be created to bang against that tin can that represents 10,000 lives lost in abortion. This is something that we need. I believe it's safe to say, I don't think it's too strong to say, every person that's listening can do something and must do something.
Yes. And in fact, to your point, Mike, one of the things that really makes this resonate with people around the state is the fact that when they really understand what this is, they understand that it's their participating in the process. It's not an act of civil disobedience. There's a time and a place for people to decide if they're going to engage in that. But this is something within our state constitution, a provision that's available where people can engage in this process and they can be a voice for the voiceless. So we would ask folks to go to our heartbeathero.org site, print the petition out, sign it, send it in, send it to their friends and family via email and text and social media. They want to help us defray some of the costs associated with it. There's a tab they can do that. But the main thing we need their help with is print out the petition, sign it, share it with their friends, get them into us as fast as possible so that we can protect vulnerable human life in the state of Florida.
We've got less than a minute to go, and I would just love to add my voice to that for that part about donating, because this does cost something to do. All the mailing, all the processing, all the paper, all the printing that you're doing, and this is the thing that God called you to do on that day in 2018. And people can help alleviate that burden. I think of Christian in the story, Pilgrim's Progress, who carried on his back a burden. And this is something that we can help alleviate the burden that God has placed upon you, Mark. And by just doing that, maybe donating $20.
Sure.
Donating time.
Yes.
Donating this ink that it's going to take to print out 20 of these petitions. Get them signed. Get them mailed inside of 30 days.
Yes. Thank you so much, Mike. I'm so honored for the opportunity to share. You're a good friend, and we've known each other a long time, but it's fitting that we're having a chance to talk about this now in this day and age and share with your listeners the opportunity for them to get involved and to help protect vulnerable human life in our state, in our time.
Never a better cause than this. Mark Mink, thank you for being here. Friends, we've got to go. Thanks for joining us here on Afternoons with Mike on the Shepherd Radio Network.